the smell of napalm in the morning. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? Smells like victory.
Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, and welcome back to Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We got Matt Byrne on the board. Finally, we're all in here after big snowmageddon here, although it didn't quite get the 12 inches. Now, if we were doing the weather, Matt, your job would be to listen to all the other weather people, even the smoking hot weather girls, and the highest one, 12 inches, we'd have to go 14 inches.
Yeah, it's pretty bad out there,
it
actually.
Bleeds.
I didn't expect it to stick is all.
Well, why not? They said it was going... Actually, well, yeah. They said a foot. We got like 2 inches, 3 inches. We should be happy.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, it's not as bad as they said it was going to be. But, you know, the last couple of winters have been pretty, you know, mild overall, so.
This year, not so much, I don't think. But I hope it is. We have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed, yeah.
There's a guy. He's probably been out shoveling his snow and everything already.
No way. Morning, Jeff.
No way, Jose. So they almost...
I'm waiting for the next 10 inches to fall before I move.
Yeah, well, they almost killed us on the way in because the ramp from the... inbound Kennedy to the now it's the IW Wells. Everything was fine except when they plowed the Eisenhower, they didn't plow it all the way over, so the ramp essentially dumped you off into the snow that was plowed.
Oh,
yeah. So I mean, if you didn't,
that's helpful.
Yeah, if you didn't have a chance to move over pretty quick, you might have been in trouble there. But I-65 is closed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For those that don't know, I mean, there's obviously some pretty tough interstate spots in the country. It's hard to be number one, but the one that has the most issues on any kind of a storm is usually I-65 because it's straight south, up and down through an agricultural area, and the drifting across the thing makes it damn near impossible.
Right, there's no wind breaks at all.
No wind breaks at all. Just like directly all the way across. It's pretty scary stuff. Interesting weekend. The market is way up, by the way. S&P is up 61. NASDAQ futures up 356. So that puts the NASDAQ futures up probably 800 and some points since 2 o'clock on Friday, or maybe 1 o'clock on Friday. I'll be generous with this constant drive from government stuff. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, this is just not healthy. So I don't know what... So now today we're going to have some kind of eight Democrats cross the line. But a couple Republicans went the other way. They're going to do something to January of 2026, which would be, was it 2026? So that's not that long. I don't know why they're thinking that's a good deal, John.
No, it's 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very long. And but then they're going to have a vote on the SNAP benefits. And, you know, it's one of those things, whichever thing you're on, you know, and I'm accused by some on the show of not really being in the middle. And, you know, and maybe I'm not with the heart, but with the pen, I sure as hell am, John. And both sides, to me, seem to have no clue what's going on in their population. Mm-hmm. And no clue about what is affecting people and what this drive to pour money in so rich people can make money on stock and houses, what it's done to the rest of the crew. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there really is any sort of a... Even though the current administration is trying, you know, through their own histrionics, to cut back on some of this drug trade, but it looks to me like they're doing it all the wrong places. They're not going anywhere here because they're afraid they might find somebody making money or something. But that's, you know, I'm not sure on that. But the thing that really grabbed me, I don't think they have any idea of the depth of the drug problem in these big cities, in terms of what it's done to the human capital. We're not talking about booze. When I talk about marijuana, where you go in a wagon for 3 weeks and you're okay, yeah, John. The people I see downtown, they're, how can I say this without being a non-clavic? They're almost like half human beings. They can barely walk, barely talk, and they're like 30-some years old. I don't know. We didn't have a chance last week talking about the veterans with Dr. Johnson, but I don't know what the comeback is for that. Really, I don't know if there is one. I don't know how much damage you've done to yourself. I mean, I've seen people that drank way too much. I've never seen anybody look like that. I mean, we're at a point where you can't even put words together. It's scary. And I don't think, but this, you know, this SNAP benefits, why do people need food stamps? Well, Mark was talking last Thursday about how many people in the, or Mike was, Friday, how many people in the Army qualify for food stamps with the salary they get. There's 41 million people, almost 42 million people in the Senate, well, like SNAP, I guess. You know, there's another like 11 or 12 that qualify, either are too proud or don't even know they qualify.
But I remember a couple years ago, Tom, where Walmart had the bulletins put up in their lunchrooms and their stores for employees to apply for, you know, SNAP benefits because their paychecks weren't enough for people to live on. So, you know, what does that tell you about, you know, whose side is, you know, Walmart working for?
Well, I mean, I guess the term competitive wage is, but it's not, you know what, though, it's not even the wage. It's the, I don't know how widespread this is, but I used to, when her friend had a house down in Ogden Dunes, which she still does, but it's for sale, nobody wants it, of course, everybody else is sleeping in, and I'm up there early, and I'm going down, they had a great car wash down there, and I'd stop at the Walmart, and I'd do my stuff just to do my sniffing around, which I, you know, do for Stocks and Jacks. And I was talking to somebody in Walmart, and I'll say one thing positive about them is they look like they had a lot of people they hired who were special needs, and so you saw a lot of that, which, I mean, my hat's off to them for doing that. But one of the ladies actually was telling me, guys like us old farts would say, okay, somebody's making $10 an hour, well, okay, that's $400 a week. They claim if it's real slow on a Wednesday, they'll tell people not to come in on a Thursday. Well, how do you even pay the crummy rent like that? And one of the guys on the show, Andrew, he's getting a new job other than this, and he says the other place, they're down to he works at one of those Canes places near Wrigley Field. Well, now since there's no baseball, I guess it's pretty slow. People are on 5-hour shifts, and they'll tell people leave after 4. How do you even pay the parking, for God's sake?
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, what are we doing here? Anyway, how much money did you make on this, on your little deal to have the pitchers in Cleveland rig their bets on the pitches they threw? Are you still making dough?
About 2 years. Was it 2023, they think, it started?
So Jen, you've been around a while. What makes people think today with all this gambling, first of all, it's going to be, this is the fourth or fifth time in our lifetime that gambling was going to save our sorry ass, right? The first one was, we always had horse betting. Then it was the lottery. No, it's going to absolutely, all this money's leaving the state, need the lottery, blah, blah, blah. And so we get the lottery, and sure enough, you don't even make a lot of money, nothing changes. So then they have, now Trump pardoned Daryl Strawberry today for tax evasion?
Yeah.
What is with this guy? Anybody he likes, he pardons? Anyway, then it was, off-track betting? Then it was going to be the casinos. Then it was going to be the games and bars.
Video poker,
and then it was going to be the Chicago casino. And now we're into sports gambling. I don't feel saved, do you?
No. Yeah, and, you know, I wonder, and I don't know what your take on it is, but even these two indictments, the Cincinnati players, is to me just a shot across the bow, because they are not the only two people, believe me, who are doing this, and not the only two people, Cincinnati's team either, I'm sure, but this is a way of finding some test case or cases that they can, give lip service, to the critics of sports betting and the crookedness of the whole operation, and make it look like they're actually concerned about it, but they're not concerned about it, Tom. I mean, to me, it's just a way of, you make one, indictment or two indictments, and then everybody goes home and everybody keeps doing what they were doing. I don't think it's going to have any chilling effect on other players who've been compromised.
What are you talking about? It's what's the league word? MLB. We are aware of the indictment. Fully cooperated. Major League Baseball is all on this.
Of course. Well, they say that. But.
Well, for those that have no idea what we're talking about, which is easy, one would think that if you wanted to bet, say, on the Bears yesterday, the Bears were, I don't know what the hell they were, say they're 3-point favorites, okay, you bet on the Bears or you bet on the Giants, either give 3 or get 3, or it's usually 3.5, so there's not a push. So what ends up happening, you might actually get a push, but so what happens there is you put up $110 to make 100. So if you get a win, you get 210 back. It's been 11-10 for 70 years then. And you would think that would be, you probably could rig the game and something like that, especially if it was a huge point differential. And I think colleges right now, for lack of a better term, do rig the game. Because if some team is playing some schlump and they're 30-point favorites, I think the coaches know fairly well that they're 30-point favorites and act in the fourth quarter to score and make sure they win by 30 points. Now, I'm not so sure that's rigging, but it's something. I mean, instead of putting the second string in, you leave the first string in to make sure you cover.
Nobody's doing that kind of rigging for nothing. Sure.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
I don't think they're doing it for the old, team sport, the college try. No, it's like we're going to run up the score.
Well, I mean, the first...
Some people were completely disconnected who are going to make a lot of money there.
Well, the first...
No, everybody's in on it.
Well, the first guy who admitted to that, God, how long has he been dead? Paul Bear Bryant. It's not Bear, Bear Bryant. One day he was, I don't know, his team was like a 24-point favorite, and they're up by 23 with like 30 seconds to go, and the other guy's like 25-yard line, and he boots a field goal. Now, Bear Bryant was around for a long time, and he had this huge reputation. Why, I don't know, but he did. And all of a sudden, a couple of newspaper guys are asking him, hey, coach, why'd you kick that field goal? And he goes, well, I knew the spread was 24, and I know a lot of Alabama people bet on Alabama. And it just, dropped like a fart in the church, and nobody said boo. That was it. I mean, he told the truth. Everybody just said, okay, then. But now, if you've not onto this sports betting stuff, the amount of prop bets, and I know you never want to give him any kind of kudos whatsoever, but your buddy Pritzker actually put through a rule against this. Now, I don't know how it applies to baseball, though, John. It must, though. Anyway, Illinois passed a law, I think it was at Pritzker's behest, and he signed it, that says you can't have any bets online. I don't suppose you go to the casino. Maybe you can. I don't know. But you can't have any online bets that are the work of only one person. In other words, you can't bet on whether the first play of the game is going to be a pass or a throw, because a coach makes the call. There's like five or six they note. I didn't see anything in there regarding baseball, though, Jan, but or basketball. So, even has any idea what the hell I'm talking about here? You can go in. One of my buddies at the bar last week, or 2 weeks ago, shows me, Jan, like the Pacers are playing somebody, and who gives a bleep? And all of a sudden, there's Jan Flanagan over under on rebounds in the first quarter. Points in the first quarter. And you put the two together and make it a parlay where it pays 4-1 or 5-1 or some damn thing. And I'm going, wait a minute. If ever there isn't anything that's so able to be rigged, you're not even rigging the game at that point. You're just saying, I'm only going to get two rebounds in the first quarter and then I'm going to play hard for the rest of the game. And it's not even. So this is actually the two guys here, we've been talking here forever, Emmanuel Clase and Luis Ortiz. They're rigging bets on pitches thrown.
Right, and this is what I wanted, because I didn't read deeply enough in the story to figure it out, but was this in, they were relaying to, bettors or syndicates or whatever, that certain pitches would be a certain pitch. But what I did not understand, maybe you can tell me, was this, in real time, or this is?
I don't think it was. I mean, Kevin and I were talking a little about it. Well, he'll know more about it on Wednesday. I don't think it was in. It was stuff like what
pitch, like the second batter in
that kind of thing.
Third inning, whatever.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, and then they would throw the he'd throw a slider like way outside instead of the fastball or something like that.
Either way, it's bad. You know?
My first thought was just like yours. How are they signaling him? How's the better? You know, you Chad Flanagan, $500 on a ball the next pitch. How do you signal to the guy throw the next one in the dirt? I don't think that's it. It has to do with the
type. Explain why these games take so damn long.
Well, actually, they're like 20 or 30 minutes quicker since I got that pitch clock.
Oh yeah, that's true.
But I mean, I think somehow it has to do with. There's a little bit of a summary on this thing. According to the indictment, the two pitchers agreed in advance with their co-conspiracy on the specific pitches that they would throw during games. So these co-conspirators then used that information to place hundreds of fraudulent bet on those pitches. So it might be like the first, you know, the first pitch to Otani or something. For example, the indictment alleges Clase agreed with the sports bettors to rig prop bets on particular pitches he threw, with the bets being placed on the speed and type of pitches, often those thrown on the first pitch of an at-bat. Clase would often throw those pitches well outside the strike zone in the dirt, the indictment charges. As a result, the players would receive bribes and kickbacks, and Clase also provided money to the bettors to advance the scheme. So, I guess this is not my spot. We should have somebody on who's more of a mention. This is it could be like Kevin says, it could be the first pitch of an inning, that sort of thing, but it doesn't appear to be that, you know, Matt Burns up to the plate and it's 2-2 and you bet on a ball the next pitch and he wings it in the dugout. It doesn't appear that it's that quick. John, what makes everybody think that this is all going to be clean?
I don't think it is, and it probably hasn't been for a long time. This is much more nuanced, Tom, than throwing a game or point shaving.
Yeah.
Or something. This is, you know, it puts a whole level of concentration on the compromised player. It has, you know, it's not just the grand objective. We gotta, like, you know, slow my running down before I get to first base so I'm out. Or it's more about, you know, what pitch am I on? Is this number two or number three? What batter is this? What inning is this? I mean, these are things you got to keep track of when you're trying to.
Yeah, these guys aren't exactly the geniuses of the world to start with.
Right. Well, you know, you put that layer on top of it. And it's like, what are these games really for?
I don't know if anybody knows or cares, but I used to play basketball, 4 or 5 nights a week if I could find a game. I was in 2 or 3 leagues. And I play with the Lithuanian national team on a Thursday night over at Revis High School. I was talking about a bunch of characters. And we'd play a couple nights a week at St. Bernadette's in the dear departed Quonset Hut. But the thought of, you know, playing basketball is a tough game. You're playing against somebody who's trying to score, and you're trying to score against him. I mean, it takes kind of all. That's why sports are such a release from, like, your business or your job or everything. You forget about everything while you're playing, right? I mean,
right.
So how the hell can you sit there and go, okay, wait a minute, even if the ball comes right to me, I can only get 2 rebounds in the first quarter, but then after that I play my regular game and we can win. I mean, but then again...
Well, it would encourage me to think that there's communications going on, you know, through an earpiece or whatever, all through, you know, a game where this kind of stuff is happening. It isn't just happening on one pitch, I'm sure, you know.
Well, I have a feeling
it's happening frequently enough where they got to have somebody in constant communication with the players.
We have to get somebody on who, I mean, I guess you can go online and if Otani's not batting for 2 more innings, Kevin will talk more on Wednesday, that you can bet on the first pitch to Otani, even if the guy's going to be in the game in 2 innings. It's, but then again, also, I mean, what in the NBA, and you know, I still watch the Bulls. You know, in the NBA. What difference does the first quarter in a game in October even mean? Who gives a crap? I mean, the idea, you know, I mean, it's basketball. When you're out there, you're supposed to be trying. And every game I played, I love playing. So, I didn't care where it was on the park or whatever. I played hard. But I don't know that. I mean, it's really, you gotta save yourself for friggin' July. You know, basketball. That's, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what difference does it make? How many rebounds you get in the first quarter of a November game? Really?
Well, from a statistics standpoint, it doesn't matter. But it's just as bettable as something in the playoffs. I mean, so if anything, it's easier to cover it up.
So what do you do if you know how life manages to screw everything up, right? If it can't happen, it will, sort of thing. So what if you're not supposed to get three rebounds in the first quarter? So okay, you play outside, you don't go inside, you do things to keep yourself away from the rebound. All of a sudden a guy clunks a three pointer and comes right at you. What do you do? Duck? What's your reaction if you're the only guy near it? It's coming right at you. What do you do? Fake a broken leg or what? And go down. What do you do?
You got a lot of balls. You got to keep in the air in your head.
If you're the right fielder and you got a bum ankle, the first five balls are going to come right at you, right? I mean, it's just the way the world is. I don't know how you do this stuff, but anyway.
But I'm interested just because this is the sort of thing that you have to assume is rampant. You can't just assume it's isolated with these players. And I'm just interested in the politics or the image that they're presenting here to make it look like this is even being monitored, let alone prosecuted.
Well, the prop bets.
It's what, 20-year prison terms, isn't it? I think.
Well, I don't. But I think the Illinois law is a good one. You know, you can't. They don't want people betting on. There's a list, man. See if you can find it. The Illinois prop bet law just was passed like 6 months ago. I don't think you can bet right before on whether a guy's going to make or not make a field goal, because that's determined by one guy. Well, it's actually determined by three guys: the snapper, the holder, and the kicker. But by and large, the kicker. Of course, if you ever had a bad hold, I guess it's not your fault. But still, those are the types of things they banned. They banned whether the team's going to, if they win the coin flip, if they're going to defer or not. You know, stuff where a guy could easily know what the bet is and do the opposite or do that way.
So it says in Illinois, prop betting is legal.
Right, but there's a ban on certain types of it.
Hmm.
Just Google prop betting ban, and it'll show you what it is. It basically comes down to anything determined by one person. So also, John, in the same thing, I don't know if you saw this, CNBC just came out with their valuation of all the football teams. And again, one of the continual themes of the show, only because I'm a numbers goofball, and I have to put my friends like Jan through it. I hope you don't mind too much, Jan. We go through the numbers. Because one thing about numbers, they never lie. Well, I guess you can make them lie, but by most of it, they really don't lie. What is the difference in the world when you have people can't get SNAP benefits? We have people trying to cut people off of Medicaid. And we have, and there's people that are rampant about these are all really good things because we can't afford it. And I absolutely understand, I think, to a certain extent, how the medical establishment is managing to destroy this country, by the day. We don't seem to be able to tackle that, how you want to do it or don't want to do it. And we even have people on the show that are really, really bright are saying, well, the best way to do it is just cut off the lower people because it will lower the demand and somehow that will force prices to come down and blah, blah, blah. I don't see that as a solution at all. However, just pouring more money in on something that you're paying way too much for is not the solution. I get that part. Cutting people off is not the solution. So maybe we should try C or D, don't you think, Jen? Somehow we need to deal with the problem that is, and the problem that is the stuff costs too much. And right now you're having all kinds of people that are piling out of the system and not even having insurance and not even going to a doctor. And it's... That's not, but anyway, those are the numbers. But it also comes in here, how am I able to apply this to CNBC's official NFL team valuations? John, we talk all the time about, the Bitcoins of the world, the cryptos, and how there doesn't appear to anything behind them, and yet they're trading for massive numbers, less than they were, but they're still up there. And you have all these individual stocks that are trading for revenue and earnings numbers. Even a couple people at the big banks this weekend said it's the highest value the market's ever been, even since 1929. And yet today, we're up 60 points in the SPOOs because it's business as usual. Pouring money in the system, same stuff. We're going to keep extending whatever it is we've been doing because certain people are really benefiting by it. Now, which leads me, can you imagine, to football. You might say, how the hell did that lead you to football? But this is a pretty good one because they don't even... remember last time we went through this, Jan, all he did was say the value and they had the earnings, right? This one actually has the revenue per team. And I wonder, I mean, what's going on in the world where, for instance, we've got the Chicago Bears are $8.9 billion they say they're worth. And now they claim the revenue last year was $627 million and the earnings are $74 million. And they say they're worth, rounded up, $9 billion. All right, well, that means it's 15 times revenue, Jen. Boy, that's a little rich, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's what? It's how many times earnings? What's 74 goes into 900. For God's sake, what's that, 30, 40? I don't see how, if you were to buy that team, now, of course, if you're a big shot now, you don't pay the interest, you have the state pay it for you, or you have somebody pay it, or whatever the hell you do. If you pay $9 billion for that team, and you're just we're not talking about credit cards like regular people paying 25% or something, but even if you have a kind of a legitimate business, not, you know, Oracle or someplace, you're going to be paying, say, 6-7% for that loan. How could you not? Well, what's 7% of $9 billion? $630 million a year. How the hell? Now, I'm going to say that the $74 million that the Bears make, everybody else makes more, I'm going to say it's low because they're paying all the people in the family a bunch of money they don't deserve. Right. So let's say the number is at least 100, because everybody else's seems to be. Well, okay, so... If the number is 6% is going to be what, $600 million a year, how the hell do you pay? How do you pay $600 million a year in interest if you're only making $100 million? I mean, what is their view of the world that is so different than the K-shaped recovery you're talking about when, you know, half society or two thirds, let's say a third can't afford food and the other two thirds can't afford a house. How in the hell are people going to still keep buying seat laces? How much are we going to lean on the wealth bubble that the stock market and houses have given the top, not the top, a lot of people have 401ks and houses. I'm not saying it's just the time. But how much can we lean on this wealth bubble versus income? I guess is a long-winded question.
Well, you know, if you relate it back to the shutdown, just, you know, not to get too far afield here, but I think they're definitely...
John, it's all the same subject. We're not getting a feel. It's all the same subject.
As you indicated, it was. But I think the reason things speeded up with the ending of the shutdown is within hours of Trump floating the idea that instead of, you know, the Obamacare subsidies going to the insurance companies, it would go directly to consumers.
Which could never happen.
Of course, but just to float the idea, Tom. Everybody scrambled like cockroaches.
But how would that even work?
This took the whole, you know, pot out of consideration for the government money the insurance companies expected and that had been fueling their stock explosion, you know, since Obamacare was passed. So they saw, we don't want that. So, but Trump didn't have to deliver on it, nor would he probably be able to. But even to say that scared the bejesus out of
I'm not so sure. I think the 39, 40 days, I think the phones have been ringing off the hook at all these places.
Yeah, but you know, hasn't been any shift, you know, by the Democrats until that happened.
Well, they actually floated the one-year thing.
Because I'm sure all their donors, all the CEOs, all these people who were expecting this to work out somehow in their favor, they were just waiting for the checks to be delivered, so... Well, we're certainly not going to go along with this.
Well, first of all, there's no way that could happen. There's no way you could.
But that isn't my point, Tom.
Yeah, I understand.
In fact, that somebody would even say that publicly, and it got support right away from some of the pundits. Well, that was enough. You don't have to deliver on something like that.
Well, what the how?
I wish we could scare a lot of places or a lot of people or a lot of companies that easily.
I think the whole thing has to be, somehow or another, it has to be worked from the way up from the bottom. And I think the theory behind Obamacare, there was nothing wrong with the theory. Because I think a lot of people, and I don't think I want to put you in this camp, nobody really could explain to you. And the only reason why I can a little bit is because Audrey had a friend whose husband happened to be a director of purchasing at one of the biggest hospitals in this area. Actually, the biggest hospital outside of Chicago, so you could probably narrow it down if you wanted to. And he explained to me how the financing worked in a hospital. And this has to be, when was Obamacare? It had to be like 3 or 4 years before Obamacare. And how the whole thing was coming unhinged. And I think Obama did two things wrong. One, he didn't find a way to make it bipartisan. Because since the day it passed, all we've heard the Republicans do is bitch about it without really coming to another kind of solution. So it gives them a constant target. And it was done poorly because instead of addressing the cost issues, they just shoved it around a little bit and put more on the insurance companies, like you said. So it was never, and it's never really been fixed, because you can now, it's so easy for one side to keep saying it's lousy, and the other side defends it. And the fact is, it needs changing. I mean, it just needs changing, because somewhere along the line, the cost part has to be addressed, because that's where the issue is. And yet, how many 20-some years later, we're still right where we are, aren't we? And the question comes down is, do we fund it and throw money in there so people can deal with the system as it currently is? Or do we not fund it and essentially let them die? Or do we fix it? And one side's on one side A, one side's on B, and nobody's on C, are they? Nobody wants to fix it.
And COVID just gave another bargaining chip. We got to keep the subsidies high, even though COVID is, by legislative standards, almost ancient history now, but it's still contaminating the whole process. So.
But weird part, Jen, is this whole mess. I don't understand. We rag about Medicare at drug prices, and Trump just talked to, what was it, Trump RX or some crap? I mean, the guy in his name.
Yeah, with Ozempic.
Yeah. But it's all, we're talking about the stuff that affects the government, all right, in that regard. Obamacare, it's money that the government puts out, it affects the government. But I'm going to say, take a stab at the number here, Jen, I'm probably wrong. I'm going to take a stab and say 80%, 70% of the thieving is coming from you and me, or PTI paying hospitalization for people. That's the problem. Okay, so you pull Ozempic back so the government pays less. So what? Another person still pays the same amount. I mean, obviously, if you're in the government, you want to use it, it's better for them. But what about everybody else? That's okay.
Well, this is why the guide to Medicare. You probably get this every year too. The whole thing is about which plan covers which drug and which percentage of the cost. So the average person has to become a Chinese acrobat to figure out what this is going to cost me if I'm on a drug for the rest of my life. This is the difference between bankruptcy and insolvency.
But
it
what is
be that way? But
no. But what is? Why is it totally off the news media and politician and everybody else's lips, except maybe ours? The problem is with everybody. It's not just them. It's not just the government pouring money in. It's not just this guy doesn't deserve it, or why are we giving money to Joe when Joe's not working and he's in whatever he's doing? Why is he in Obama? What about the regular schmo? What about Jim, who actually has a job, has a company, and the company's paying $2,800 a month for his insurance, and it ought to be $15,000? That's the problem. Does anybody ever address that? Have you ever see?
Who uses the media, print media, and the national news as a megaphone better than the pharmaceutical industry?
Well, but they also are stuffing the pockets of everybody. And what do you think would happen? the NFL, whatever, the NFL, Major League Baseball, if there were no drug ads. Do you think these guys would still be making? Do you think the Bears would be making $100 million a year, or 150, or whatever these guys are making?
I don't think there's a business model that they could be looked to fix it.
Yeah. So what are we doing? We're spending a bunch of dough for people to go to their doctor to tell them to give them something that may or may not work. It's 10 times overpriced in most cases, and people get, and somebody else. Not somebody else. People collectively pay for it, and then you have other people that, totally rag about the, illegal people that came across the border draining the system, and yet there's rich people that have two knees, two shoulders, a heart, heart bypass. They're into the millions of dollars of I mean, not millions, but $1 million worth of stuff they never paid for. But that's not welfare, right? Welfare only applies if it's to an immigrant guy who walks into the emergency room at county hospital and has to 8 stitches. We don't count the knees and hips and everything else of everybody else, do we?
No. Well, Carl's talked about this many times about health insurance not being health insurance. And once you get everybody, you know, to be paying for it collectively, you're just throwing efficiency out the window. You're making a mockery of it. There's no way it's going to keep costs down. It's going to mask any cost increase you want to put in place and, you know, drive it up for the people in this country and cut it for everybody else in the world. That's a great, you know.
Well, that's one
for the people in this country.
That's one part of it. It's one part of it. Yeah, I mean, you know, people that absolutely is a part of it. You get to demand stuff that you on your own couldn't afford. But the reason why you can't afford it is because the cost is too high. I mean, you know, we actually have one of the listeners. And I have it buried here somewhere, Jen. He was born in a little company, Mary Hospital. Where were you hatched? I was Inglewood.
I was at Mercy Hospital.
Okay.
Well, no longer. I mean, it's not called Mercy
anymore. Oh, yeah, it is. They said a big redo. They're Mercy. They're bought by somebody, but they're still Mercy something something. Anyway, but Mercy was the oldest hospital in the city, isn't it?
Yeah, 1846.
Yeah,
something,
yeah. That's my mom's OB Ganny lady was down there. That's also an interesting story. She died actually not too long ago, and I knew her because she used to play golf at Ridge Country Club. Her name was Dr. Town, and she used to play golf with this lady called Van Wee was her last name, and they were, Jen, they were a 50-year ago, shall we say, lesbian couple, and she was so far ahead of her game. My mom had some kind of surgery, and you know, who knows, you don't know what your plumbing surgery your mom gets, nor do you ever ask, right, when you're a kid. Well, it turns out that she, you know, remember the big advancement in the bikini cut?
Oh, yeah.
Well, if some people don't know, if you get a cesarean, they used to cut up and down, right? So later you had this scar that would stick out of the top of your bikini, all right, which people don't want to see. Who the hell knows, but... But anyway, somebody invented a way to go in horizontally in a much smaller cut, and you know, it was a big breakthrough. Turns out this lady was doing it like years and years before, but because she was locked in at Mercy and was a lesbian, she never got any credit for it whatsoever. But it actually was kind of her invention, which is kind of weird, huh? Talk about...
Yeah, I've never heard of this.
Yeah, well, but anyway... I talk about how do we get on the subject, but it has to do with the media and it has to do with pretty much everything. Isn't it amazing how all this stuff is the same subject, Jen, when you come right down to it?
Scary, Tom.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to do a quick break since we didn't even talk about it earlier, where the market is, even though we're a little bit behind because of the snow. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3900. 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitchagumi.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks, and kudos to Matt Weber. You know what today is, Mr. Flanagan?
It's the anniversary.
50 years.
50th.
And they finally, I think, figured out why the thing went down, eh? Evidently, it came too close to some reef, and it put a hole in the bottom.
Yeah. Good choice, Matt.
Yeah, man, no problem. Matt's on his game all the time, this guy.
Yeah, apparently it was the largest ship to have sunk in all the Great Lakes.
Yeah, well, it's a biggie.
Yeah, huge.
So you see, Matt, how our buddy Flanagan, because he's gotten so right-wing over the years, he claims that the shutdown, is the aversion was because of some utterance from Trump.
Mm.
And clearly he misses the big headline here, John. I have to say this to you, but you know what the big headline was for your buddies and you? FAA prohibits most private jets at 12 major airports amid shutdowns, air traffic problems. If you're a big shot and you can't fly into the airport, you're going to call the president and say, end this thing.
Well, John Cornyn, you know, Texas, was the 60th vote, and he couldn't get to Washington because of, you know.
See, and that's, now if you can't get your private jet into Washington, we got to end this thing.
Yeah, we have to have our priorities.
I'd say that was at least as big of an issue. God, how do you even think of stuff like that? Hey, we're going to do this real quick.
It wouldn't be because, you know, Mary Schmo had to miss a wedding.
Oh, no. God, we could care less about her.
Cares about her.
Anyway, I'm going to do real quick. SPV is up 61. NASDAQ is up 367. We're busy all around the world. The weird part is gold's up $97. Silver's up $1.90. Jan, you know, when you trade for people, one thing you don't want to do, well, you always want to do if it's a winner, right? You never get a complaint. And on Friday, we had this, you know, we have our gold position that we're kind of long in, but I like to do a little something more on the upside, either do a repair or do something, you know, something that, Trump just pardoned Rudy Giuliani now, all these guys that are in jail.
And Sidney Powell and a bunch of guys.
So is that what you're supposed to do, pardon your friends? Is that, anyway, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, why would you pardon an enemy?
I suppose, yeah. On Friday, before, you know, the news of this potential deal came leaking out, I thought this extra spread we had in the GDX was a total clunker, right? So somehow, my brothers managed to sell it at 20 cents, you know, which is not great, but we paid 9 for it, and I thought for sure it was a loser. So we made something. We're pretty happy about it. Well, immediately, the thing we sold at like 25 cents is offered at 3 cents. So Dan says to me, what do you think? And I go, I don't know, 3 cents looks a little cheap. But, you know, you don't want to be trading that kind of stuff for people with like 5 hours to go, right? Because nobody really that's not what we do. Unless it works. Then, of course, everybody wants you to do it, right? So I go, I'm just on the tip of my tongue. I would have said, okay, we just made 11 cents. Why don't we buy 3 of these a piece for everybody owns this? Because we've got a lot of people in the GDX. Which would have been a real big order. I almost said, let's buy 3 of them a piece, you know, just for last, because this looks weird today for some reason. So I go, nah, we don't want to do that. Where do you think they closed? 60 cents. And now today they'd be like $3, but they expired Friday. I mean, this is nuts. You know, even if you're winning, this is crazy, Jan. This is crazy. I'm just saying. Were you at the Notre Dame game Saturday night? And how much here's what I want to get out of you, and Kevin, I'll ask him on Friday or Wednesday. What's your number for how much you need to inconvenience the hell out of 80,000 people?
Well, it's calculus that I don't really function well with.
Well, I mean, we're both Notre Dame grads. We like to see the place do well, and if we're an Iowa fan, we'd like to see Iowa. So now you've got 80,000 people. You inconvenience the bejesus out of them by having a night game to start with, and now you're talking about November. So most people would say, we don't want to do that to anybody. I mean, you're tailgating in the dark. It's dark at 4 o'clock, right? Or 4:30. You're liable to get some cold weather, maybe bad or not. You know, maybe you can't count on when it's going to rain. But even if you have horse bleep weather at 1 o'clock, you sort of can put up with it, right? But if it's at 7:30, it's a little harder. Now, all of a sudden, you're bussing people back to unlighted parking lots, you know, at 11:30. I'm going to say, Jan, for $40, you'd never do it. Now, if it's the game, the first night game ever, and you know, the TV's going to give you 50 mil, you know, maybe you understand. You know, remember the old joke about where the guy says, would you have sex with me for $1 million? And the girl goes, I don't know. And he says, would you have sex with me for $100? She goes, what do you think I am, a hooker? And the guy goes, we've already established that. We're just negotiating the price. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, what was the goose to Notre Dame for probably the least cared about game on the year, even though I love Navy? A Notre Dame Navy game on a night in November. What do you suppose they got extra for that? And was it worth it?
Well, not to the fans.
It rained and snowed the whole damn game. It was 37 yeah. degrees.
So, you know, it's, you know, who's the game being played for, and what kind of concessions are made to maximize, you know, what Notre Dame can walk away with. And you know, that's beyond ticket revenue. If it's more lucrative to do it that way and have the game, you know, drag out to almost midnight, and the fans be damned. I'd say that's kind of a good sport to stay away from.
Well, you become more of a studio audience. But you know what's the phenomenon, Jan, and I don't know what you're the wordsmith. The phenomenon is not just the pursuit of the almighty dollar, but it's the next dollar. It's like, okay, we need you to contribute so you can get tickets, and then we're going to charge you a bunch for tickets. We're going to charge you a bunch to park. But the minute we've got your money, it's already in our right pocket. Now that's we don't owe you anything. we could have the game at 4 a.m. We don't owe you crap. But if somebody pays us 48 cents to move the game to an inconvenient time or whatever it is, now we get to do that. You've already given us yours. You've lost all rights here. That's why I don't want to give any of these people any money. I honestly don't, because it's almost like, you know,
Well, you know, it's the same problem with political contributions too. Are you purchasing a voting share? No, although. You know, if it's big enough, yeah, you get a lot of votes. But the average person, you know, making a contribution isn't getting any access, isn't getting any favors. You know, and it's the same thing with supporting college sports or professional sports.
Well, and also, if you're a shareholder.
Yeah.
You have no say.
And unless you're one of those preferred people. Otherwise, you know, well, thank you very much for your money, but you know, that's the last we want to hear from you. Just make sure your check clears the bank. So,
Are we ever as a country, are we ever going to straighten some of this stuff out and put some sense of common sense or morals back into some of it? Because I don't see how you just keep going down this rat hole without people just losing their whole sight of anything being right or correct. Or I mean,
it's unregulated capitalism, and you know, there's only certain ways you can regulate capitalism before it turns into something else. But unregulated capitalism combined with any sort of criminal intent is a, you know, pretty disgusting, you know, road to go down. But you know, I don't know what kind of regulation would be tolerated. I don't know what kind of regulation would be even helpful at this point. But
I think you could. This is where, you know, everybody says I love government. Well, I don't. This is where I think if you design stuff to where you didn't need regulation, that would be the way to do it. We didn't need. We didn't. we needed very minimal regulation on the trading floor because everybody watched everybody else. Because everything was out right in front of you.
Self-regulated.
Yeah. Well, self-regulated because people didn't want the industry to get a bad name. And, oh, by the way, if somebody cheated, they cheated right in front of you and they cheated from you. It'd be an interesting story. But Audrey and I went to, we were going to go to this Italian place, 159th Saturday night. And we didn't, it was too crowded. So right next door is this place called the Ashford House. It's an Irish restaurant bar, and they do breakfast, and the guy has a really nice food store, but he also has this massive catering business. So imagine that. We sit down there, and every time we go there, we sit at the bar, talk to the owner, and a few of his Irish cronies sitting at the bar. You imagine me fitting in with that group, then? So we're there BSing with the guy, and we've known him pretty much. And I said, gee, how many, you know, he starts telling me what we're doing. We cater to 200 people one day, 250 the next, whatever, and real nice guy. He goes, hey, I said, what kind of a plant you need for all that stuff? Well, hey, grab your glass of wine. Let's go take a tour. So we go back there. Some of this stuff is absolutely incredible, John. I mean, the guy's got a machine his dad bought Germany, 1916, it says on the machine, this huge, heavy cast iron thing. If you make up a whole bunch of dough for bread or for rolls, you put the dough in there, you pull the handle, this thing comes down, and it spits at all these little slots, and each one of the slots is a roll. It's unbelievable. The thing's 120 years old, or 110 years old. But anyway, he's showing us all this stuff, and just in general, you get the state of what's going on. And I don't know what's bad or good about it, but he says we used to use all. Guess how many turkeys a guy can cook at one time? Like 40. 40.
40?
Yeah. In this huge rotating oven. I mean, it's unbelievable the equipment they have. But anyway, he goes, we used to use fresh turkeys, but the two places that provided them were both out of business. Remember Rosebud?
Oh, yeah.
They're gone. I didn't know that. My mother got a fresh turkey every year from Rosebud. It got delivered to the local store. I guess they're gone to somebody else. He goes, I can't get fresh turkeys anymore. And then, like, a couple of the bread companies. He goes, we're down to, like, two or three bread companies. We used to have five. It's just relentless, Jan. I didn't know that. You know, I mean, it's everywhere you look, there's less and less. I mean, everybody in their light, they don't realize that, 30 years ago, every corner had an independent drugstore. There's nobody left. I mean, there can't be. Is there 10 independent drugstores left in Chicago?
Well, I couldn't name you two.
There's the one guy still on, up by, if he's still open, there's one by the L stop up on Lincoln. I think there's a guy there. There's a couple. But the reason why is the state, for the state payments, won't pay people for like a year. Nobody can sell you a thing of drugs for $110 that they pay $100 for and not get the $110 for a year. And who the hell can do that except some big company, right?
Well, it's the same thing with agribusiness, yeah. Too. You know, animal, processing plants or whatever. You know, I remember there's a little turkey farm up in Kenosha County, Wisconsin, near where we used to rent a summer cottage, and it was family owned. And you could always tell when it was going to rain because you could hear these turkeys just going crazy, all gobbling at once. And they get them into shelters or whatever, but they sell to purveyors and processors, and they canned some of this their turkey meat there. I can't imagine an operation like that surviving today with what it takes to get the leverage to make money in this business. And the Chinese model is to just take over whole counties,
yeah,
and devote them to piggeries or whatever else. And environmental questions go out the window, the neighbors' concerns go out the window, and it's all about extracting every last penny out of your product. So nobody can compete at that level anymore. So you have to go out of business.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier the a regulated capitalism, and I'm going to say a lot of the problem with the capitalism is the people who are doing the most damage are the people that are regulated.
It's the crooked regulation.
It's crony. It's nose up your ass of government regulation. Right? I don't.
Well, the regulators have taken over, and the regulators are of one with the industries that they regulate. So, and that's by design, and it's, you know, the lobbyists and, you know, the politicians that are in cahoots with each other and give the illusion that they're independent, but they're not.
No, and I mean, Carl goes back and forth with me on this, and, you know, Carl has more information than anybody I know in terms of. But I, you know what, Jan, he's wrong on this. I think somehow, if you're going to do this correctly, you can't start with, you know, people demanding less and worrying about how much they charge for the drugs in Egypt. Someplace, somewhere, somebody has to tell me, okay, because of the insurance problem, which you brought up, that you're not really the payee for that second, even though you are the payer because you're paying huge numbers for your policy. But on that particular purchase, you're not the payer, or the insurance company is. So it's kind of a, what they used to say in high school, a gestalt type of idea. It's an odd relationship, right?
Yeah.
So you are the payer in the end, collectively, but on the individual choice, you're not the payer. So that's an unusual situation that needs to be considered. I'll use the term considered. But nobody in this country, whether you're right or left or whatever the hell you are, you're the most opinionated person on earth, if I were to say, okay, somebody comes up with, quote, a patent, what does that mean? Well, they invented something, they should be able to take advantage of it for like a long time. Okay, who's they? They got all mice in their pocket? Who the hell's they? What do you mean? I said, well, say for instance, some doctor or some group has an idea, does some research, or maybe he's even from a university, and he gets Jan Flanagan to send him $1 million for pick a disease that nobody has a cure for, sickle cell anemia. So you pony up $1 million. You get a girl like Katie, who's on the show, goes and works there for the summer, works her fanny off with a bunch of other people, and all of a sudden they get a breakthrough. And she's making all the rice she can eat, and by the way, some of her research actually helped it. Now, you know, the Northwestern or Vanderbilt, whoever's doing it, whoever is giving people access to all the stuff you need. Now, of course, they're charging an arm and a leg for the overhead, so they're ripping the hell out of your $1 million. And, oh, by the way, we're going to go to government, and we're getting another $5 million if the guy has any soiree. Now there's $6 million percolating on this, plus all these people's time, and the doctor who's probably, you know, just he's on salary. I don't think he's getting a big, huge number for doing this, but all of a sudden, one of these days, we actually break through, and somebody swoops in and buys the thing. Now, who they buy it from, I don't know how that happens or what they do, but now Lilly comes in and buys the thing, and they get a patent on it. Well, wait a minute. It's your money, the government's money, Katie, and the people, the flunkies that worked on it, and I'm not talking about personally, and the doctor who's doing the research, and a few other people, and oh, by the way, the university contributed because it is their overhead, it is their place, the power, the lights, all that kind of crap. And so, but somebody somehow gets this patent. And now sickle cell anemia treatment, which we can find somebody to make for $20 a shot, we're going to charge $2,000 a shot. Is there any limit to that? And people will go, well, no, man, it's patent. They should be able to charge whatever they want. Okay, but now wait a minute. Nobody can actually pay the $2,000, but if you're insured, collectively you pay it, even though collectively you can't afford it, individually you can because you're not paying. Is somewhere along the line, Jen, is the mess I described pretty much the mess we're in? You know,
yeah, it's not even a case where you have to purchase anything in order to get a patent on it. I mean, the treatment for gout, and I knew this well, you know, 20 years ago, and I was having all sorts of gout flare-ups.
Were you drinking too much?
I don't think I was drinking too much. Oh. I think I was, but I mean, that can certainly could be true. Like, all I know is I don't suffer anymore, which is
cool. Good for you.
But it's, you know, the preferred treatment, the least invasive, was something called colchicine, which, you know, is from the saffron plant. It's an herbal, and it was, you know, used by the Egyptians to fight gout, and it was perfectly effective. You take the tiny little pills, you know.
Can you import saffron? No, you couldn't for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it was that's the expensive part of the formula, because saffron, you know, buy it as a spice or something. It's ridiculous, but there were many versions of this available under different names, and they all had saffron as the active agent. Well, somebody comes in, you know, says, "Well, we're going to add these other, you know, preservatives or whatever. It has nothing to do with the fundamentals of the drug or its active agents. And we're going to add a couple things to it, and now we're going to patent it and give it a trade name, Colchris, and everybody else goes out of business, and the price of colchicine quadruples. This is you know, happened within my experience.
It sounds like the EpiPen. Yeah.
If you have to have this stuff, your doctor's telling you you're going to be miserable if you don't get this prescription filled pronto. What are you supposed to do? You don't have any leverage. You don't have any buying power. Whatever your insurance company will cover, they'll cover. Whatever is left over, you have to pay, or you're going to suffer. So, what kind of extortion racket is that?
Well, John, in order to get something like this started, I mean, we just lobbed one out there, and I gave a little bit of my view of how these patents show up and where the wrong people get them in the first place. They're not split up, and why the government doesn't own a quarter of the patent if they pulled up quarter to dough. I have no, I don't get that. Or you or me, why? What are we investing in? We're investing in nothing. I mean,
right, and then you think of the professional organizations like the AMA and other places that own a piece of this too. Do you think they have any incentive whatsoever to cut the price?
I would doubt very seriously if that doctor actually dug this up, unless it was such an outlier where he walked in on his own. If it's the end of years of research, I don't think he gets much of a goose, does he?
No. There'll be lots of other intermediaries in the middle with a lot more effective lobbyists and a lot more invested in getting stuff done in Washington.
It's hard to get that Flanagan thumb in that pie if there's about 40 other thumbs in there. Just saying. How would this even start in the midst of what's going on in Washington right now? How would somebody even bring up the stuff we just discussed? Because if you went out to if you said we're going to change the patent laws, the appeal of the patent laws to every man is, wait a minute. So if I go in my garage and I invent something, now you're not going to let me have this patent for the next. I deserve that. Because it makes, I don't know if there's any laws on the books that make so much common sense and yet have been abused to the point of being useless for 80 years like patent laws. You?
No, and it's probably, I would say, the most arcane corner of the law. When it comes to the specialization and the attitude you have to have in order to be a patent lawyer. And pretty hard to be a patent lawyer and be a sole practitioner. You've got to have an army of people who are well-schooled in how this functions, or you're never going to make any money or never get anywhere. But that obscures the whole process to a point where the average person, or even a smart business person, has absolutely no ability to compete in this market. You've got to get the most top flight law firm that does nothing but this and pay them an arm and a leg to get the result you want. So the whole thing is guaranteed ahead of time what the result's going to be.
Well, I mean,
if you didn't have that kind of money, you wouldn't even be a player.
If you had to lob one out there and you say, okay, somebody does cure sickle cell anemia or any one of these other diseases, I won't call that an orphan disease because a lot of people have that. What's the number? I mean, if it turns out if we have to send Matt Byrne to wrestle a wisdom tooth out of an alligator to get the to get the stuff, then I guess it could be $1,000 a pop. We don't want to lose Matt.
At least 1,000.
At least 1,000, yeah. Especially if he lost an arm or something along the way. But if it turns out that the potion, like you say, is saffron, it's $25 for every shot in the butt. Somewhere along the line, there's got to be a limit. Maybe a couple of hundred, but it can't be 2,000. I mean, what are we talking here? I mean, I don't know who makes that call. But I mean,
I don't know who it can't be, whatever.
I mean,
no, and who would set caps and the kind of calculus that went into setting them, and how they could be enforced, and so that's an avenue that nobody seems to be interested in, and it's part of the whole culture where there's no such thing as non-monopoly big money businesses anymore. It's all monopolies, and it's by design, and the government is behind it and enforcing it.
Well, they're not necessarily behind it. They're just sort of a non-combatant type of thing.
They're not just helpless,
Yeah,
they've assisted in it certainly, because they've made themselves accessible to people with monopolistic intent, and become part of the enforcement arm of it. So,
well, when we were young, Jen, I mean, believe it or not, Jen and I were young at one time. when we were young, the polio had just been a big thing. I mean, it had been a big thing like forever. And when was Sock? Was he like
55? I think was when the first, you know, when it was administered for the first time, the injection.
Right. So, but I remember that. I don't remember being that young, but I remember when I was 8 or 9, my aunts and grandparents saying, you know, you would never even go to the beach in the summertime because if there was an outbreak of some kind. And all of a sudden, you know, this came up, and I remember in grammar school standing in long lines to get a shot. And then later came the sugar cube
one. The sugar cube. Yeah.
But the in those days, my dad was a policeman. I think he was making like $2,500 a year or something. What would he have paid? 2 years pay? 3 years pay? To get me that shot or my brother? I mean, at what point, what do you do? How much can you take from somebody? I mean, one of the listeners actually wrote me a while back. She's taking care of somebody else who has cancer or has no insurance. And she's kind of paying for the, you know, for the treatment. And, I don't know anything about it. I said, you know, boy, you need to find somebody to find out exactly what treatment she's getting and see if you can go across the border and get it and bring it back here. Because I think it's a lot cheaper other places, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
I mean, after the girl downstairs told me about her brain surgery here for $150,000, it didn't work, and then went over to Japan, and the guy fixed it for $11,000, I'm like, yeah, we're doing something wrong. I mean, what are we doing?
And even the polio vaccine, which by, you know, current standards seems fairly benign, you know, after the disasters of the, you know, COVID mandates. But even the polio vaccine and the trials and the research was so skewed, you know, what's come out recently in the injuries and the side effects that were masked or downplayed in the name of mass, you know, inoculation.
Well, nobody wanted their kid in an iron lung for the rest of his life, so side effects had to be pretty horrible for you to not do it.
No, but again, it's, you know, that was maybe a more effective scare tactic than what they tried to get away with in the COVID era, because the idea of being in an iron lung or something in between that and normal health was not something you'd ever wish on any child. So the fear, you know, which, you know, and unfortunately, I mean, I think it was trumped up because of FDR's condition, which, and I don't think he had polio to begin with.
It was some else. Was some offshoot of polio or something.
Yeah, but you know, the March of Dimes, and it just rolled us to hell and back, you know, to get the vaccine, and everybody had to take it. And then as soon as a new one came in, everybody had to take that one too. And now, you know, I'm just not just more cynical, but I'm just kind of weary of all this stuff at this point in my life. The people are frightened at getting any kind of medical treatment.
You know what's weird, Jan, is as cynical as you and I are, we're not cynical enough.
Yeah.
It's scary as that.
Yeah. Well,
FDR. But FDR was in, he was in the Navy, wasn't he?
No, he never served. But he was Secretary of the Navy in World War I, but he never served.
But somehow he was hanging around on ships because he did some.
Well, he did inspections and, you know, ship launchings and stuff as Secretary of the Navy.
I think it was a ceremonial part, but
it was a civilian role.
I think there was a part in the Winds of War where, you know, Pug Henry splashed water on him or something. He was at sea a couple times in one of his before he became Secretary. But you're right. He probably was not enlisted. But anyway,
well, he had a yacht as president. I mean, he liked
to travel. That's not being in the Navy.
It was the same thing with Teddy Roosevelt too. I mean, the Roosevelt family
I can't even handle Teddy. The idea of how many animals he killed just to stuff them. That creeps me out so bad.
From what I've learned about him, that may be the least offensive thing I could think of.
But still, I mean, how do you, instead of going out and play basketball, you go out and shoot birds and stuff them? I mean, what the hell kind of guy is that?
And then have him staring down at you during dinner.
I mean, Jesus. Did you ever go to that place in, the hell was the name of the place in, what's a little, you know, there's all these little towns around. Now I'd vandalize on Broadview, and one of the places right near here had the place where you go get the pitchers of beer and the peanuts all over the place, and you looked up and there were like 10 moose staring down at you. What the hell's the name of that joint?
Was it not Sawas, is it?
No, it was something Street Inn or something. I don't forget what it was, but I'm looking up there. Every time I looked up, there's something looking at me. I'm like, ugh. But
when they start winking at you, that's the time.
And that's even worse. When do you say we're going to break it back? And I think we'll have order. SP Futures up 65.
I have to cut out early today, Tom. So, but
we'll get you got to dash out. You dash now, or you got a couple questions for
us? It's me now, guys.
Uh oh, we got Nance. Uh oh. All right.
Yeah, do you want Audrey? Do you want me to call?
No. You know, I think what happened is as soon as John found out it was you, he's gone.
No.
Well, that could be.
No.
Oh, sure. Now it's a no. They didn't know I was listening.
I got a doctor's appointment I got to get ready for, so I'll go.
Well, good luck with that.
What do you do to get ready for a doctor's appointment? Somebody tell me.
Shower.
Hopefully he takes a shower. I'm just saying.
Why? He'll get out of there faster if he doesn't.
God. What a group. Anyway, SP Futures up 65, NASDAQ Futures up 387. We're going to do a real quick break. We don't want to waste any Nancy time. John, talk to you later in a week. But tomorrow should be an interesting day with all these people on about the VA. We have like four people on at the same time, but Ricky will be up for it.
Yeah, I'll be listening.
For sure.
Have a good one.
Right. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, you know? I mean, and owner of...
talking about
Home
millions
Source
of dollars.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, and owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
I'm going to be blunt, you know? I mean... I'm talking about millions of dollars.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, don't fake Stocks and Jack. I'm Tom. I'm Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 66. NASDAQ Futures up 390. Let's buzz through this quickly here because we've got the... it looks like we're going to have the... shutdown ending, so market started celebrating about 2 o'clock on Friday, maybe 1 o'clock, and now we're running right through it. DAX up 420, that's almost 2%. FTSE up 83, they're a little bit of a laggard, only 0.8. CAC around up 112, 1.4. Over in Asia, the Nikkei up 635, 1.2%. Hang Seng up 407, 1.5. Shanghai up 21.5. God, I wish I was as long as I think the people in Washington probably are. Boy, that splitter's a shot. Bonds, our 10-year is trading 4.12, which is actually up a little bit, which is kind of odd. The Bund unchanged at 2.67. Oil up 29 cents, but right on the 60 number. Gold's the number here. Gold's up $101, 41.11. Silver up 183, 49.97. I wish I'd have got a little longer in the gold. We are long, but when it does this, you're never long enough. Foreign exchange, dollar, it's still 115.7 on the euro. 131 on the British pound, both a lot lower on those, higher on the dollar in the last bit. Crypto up 1,800 bucks, 106.442. We got for a quick traffic weather sports, and we didn't get the 10 inches here. We did some places.
No, yeah, for sure. But, of course, it is 7:37 a.m. on November 10th, 2025. 31 degrees this morning. Yikes. High of 35. Feels like winter came early. Lake effect snow expected downtown until around 10 a.m. Low of 26 tonight. And just to rub it in, Phoenix, Arizona, warm with plenty of sunshine, high of 89 today, and a low of 66. Over to the sports section. In the NHL, Blackhawks beat Detroit yesterday. Final score was 5-1. Hawks scoring 3 consecutive points in the third period. Let's look at NBA real quick. Bulls play home tonight against San Antonio Spurs. That game starts at 7 p.m. And finally, NFL yesterday, Bears won against the Giants 24-20. Vikings lost to Ravens 27-19. Lions beat Commanders 44-22. And the Packers play Eagles tonight at 7:15. That's all I got, Chief. Over to you.
Nance, were you watching any of this weather stuff over the weekend?
Yes, I was.
Well, the guys on Saturday night, there was a guy on Channel 7, and he was talking about these guys were having, they were giddy because this once in every, like, 20-year experience is narrow because of the way the wind was coming down the lake and blah. There was going to be this narrow band of what some kind of a snow something they called it. There was going to be, like, 3 inches an hour and thunder and all kinds of stuff. And the question of where the band landed, you were going to get, like, 10 or 12 or 15 inches of snow and places around it, we're only going to get a couple. So everybody kept telling everybody that it was going to be all over the place. And Odd keeps texting me, snowing out here, you better be careful going in, you're going to get like 15 inches. Well, every time we went on TV, Nance, if you and I were doing a news show, we'd have to have Matt watching all the other news shows, and if somebody said 12, we'd have to say 13. It was became one of those, if it bleeds, it leads kind of thing. And we ended up with, like, by me, maybe 2, which was nice, but what did you
I don't think we have a lot out here either, but I, because of my shoulder, the person who did my driveway this morning texted me and said, please do not go outside. It's just like a skating rink out here. And he said, do not go out today at all for you. I mean, because I can't afford to fall.
No.
And
we don't bounce so good anymore, Nance.
You got that right. So I said, oh, okay. And, I don't know. Evidently, they didn't put salt on or anything. But, I mean, I knew that this wouldn't last, but I also understood that the warning is just being kind, saying, hey, look, I mean, you got problems. I wouldn't be out here diddling around in it either. So, but you're right. I mean, I didn't know which way this was going to go. My brother is very much into snow. He plowed for the state for, I don't know, 35 years or something. And he called me and said, "This anything could happen." So he said, just get what you need and just, you know, try and keep your appointments down to a minimum, or if you can cancel them for another day, that would be the way to go. And I was like, oh, okay. Him, I would more believe, because he really watching weather for him is now a hobby. But he did say this lake effect, it could do anything, and nobody's going to really know. But then yesterday, I didn't really think too much of it than that. And then yesterday when they started with the, yesterday when I got up, it was possibly 12 to 18 inches. I was like, what the heck? What happened here? I mean, it started out 1 to 3, then went 3 to 6, 6 to 12, and then it was 12 to 18. I was like, oh my, you know. That's a big difference.
Well, if you've never been around, it's rare for Chicago to get the lake effect stuff, because normally wind goes from west to east, duh. It goes across the lake, and people on the other side get this stuff. And the lake is warm. Cold water goes across the lake, creates snow, and just dumps it right there. I mean, it is deadly when it happens. I mean, I've actually driven to South Bend a couple times, you know, for basketball games, where there's been, you know, 3 and 4 deaths on the toll road where it's sunny and all of a sudden you can't see your hand in front of your face. It can be really dangerous, but it's rare for Chicago. And these guys are saying that the wind could have turned the other way and we could have got it here, but the odds are so much against it. I'm like, I believe it when I see it. But it's really bad. I-65 is closed today. In Indiana, it's horrible. So it's not like it's
really?
Nowhere. Yeah, it's not like it's nowhere. So, Nance, what's going on in your world? I know you've got, I think you'll be able to go out this afternoon. It's supposed to be like 36 degrees, so all that stuff's going to melt. Anyway, it looks to me like we're locked in at this 10-year and there's low fours, which probably puts you in the mid-sixes on the mortgage, which is kind of a long-term spot. What does that do? I mean, if we stick there for a while, is it means you got some business, new buyers, just people shifting around? What does it do?
I believe that everybody is going to stay put. I believe this. I believe that the older people like us, Tom, they want to get in ranch homes. It's the best way to say it, ranch homes.
You mean as you age, you don't like stairs as much? Is that true?
Correct. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Okay. And the people who own the ranch homes already are old people. So, and old people really don't want to move between now and Christmas. So, I don't know how the market can open up because the older people may move into to downsize. Would not move in this 2 month period because it's
plus
just,
if you get a bunch of dough, you're in Florida already.
Well, and then you've got that going on.
Yeah.
So I believe it'll start up again in January. I just think for the next 2 months, it's going to kind of like level off. Now, I heard you say, is the shutdown over? What happened? That I didn't hear this.
Well, they've got enough votes for a procedural vote to go to an end of the year type of a. They're going to push it out the way it is, with a promise that there's going to be a separate vote on the insurance stuff, like within the next few weeks, which the Republicans weren't going to do before, but now they say they're going to do. So it's a little bit of give on both sides, and so eight Democrats are piling into the vote yes side, which gets it past the filibuster, and a bunch of Republicans, or a few of them, are voting on the no side because they don't want to do any compromise. But it's going to end up being a positive, I guess, and things are going to open up. Kevin actually sent me a thing about there's four pieces of it. There's the agricultural side, which includes a SNAP, and then there's the military side, which gives people back pay, and there's like a bunch of different bills. But bottom line, it's going to be, we're going to be pushed to like January 26, I believe. Still not a full budget, which we haven't had in forever, right? Another one of these, temporary spending authorizations, but which is not the way to go. But at least going to get stuff back together. And John thinks it was Trump's claim to pull the insurance companies out of the medical stuff. I think it was because when they started banning private jets from the airports, I think that's what got over the top. Depending on how cynical you are, Nance. It looks like things are going to start to get back together without really solving any problem whatsoever. But it's got the market up, 800 points in the NASDAQ futures since, 1 o'clock on Friday. That's a big move. So we're right back to pouring money in the system and market going up, and everybody's happy who's got stock, and the wealth bubble keeps going up, even though the income stuff isn't doing so hot. When you've got 41 million people and food stamps, and I say that instead of SNAP because everybody knows what food stamps are, and another, 11 million people that would qualify if they either weren't too proud or knew about it. That's kind of a lot, isn't it? 60-some million people?
It is. And the insurance stuff is getting serious. There's a lot going on with that people don't really realize. They're pulling back on the subsidies, and then next year, if you don't sign up between... Oh, and Illinois is getting their own... You're not really... If you're on Medicaid, have to go... Even though you've got a promise, like let's say they renew it, I think, every 6 months, someone told me, and then if the six months is gone, even if, so in other words, let's say yours renewed October 1st, so you say, I have it, right? I don't have to worry about this. That's not true because Illinois is doing its own funding now. And I think it's called Get Covered Illinois. And then you have to go on and re-sign up in a 6-week period. So it's like November 1st through December 15th. They're going to have one 30-day extension. And then in 2026, if you don't sign up in that 6 weeks, you're just not getting it for that year.
Well, that's what a lot of the one side of the aisle wants to do. Just cut people off. If we don't know them and they die, it's okay. The other side wants to keep funding stuff with money we don't have. So, I mean, neither one of them are the right solution, and yet we can't seem to figure out what the right solution is. The right solution is we're charging too damn much. There isn't anybody, I won't say anybody, a lot of people got a lot of money, but there's virtually nobody can afford, you know, two new hips, two new knees, you know, a bypass surgery or something in the same year or two. What are we talking? $600,000? $700,000?
Oh, I can't even imagine. Yeah. I can't even imagine. I this little rotator cuff tear, which I was, you know, which was just an in and out same day thing, was, I want to say, 60 some thousand.
Now what was that, the gross price, or what did insurance end up paying? You know, if you don't mind me asking.
No, I think it was like, I'm not positive, but I think it was like 20 or 30, and then the surgeon got another 12 beyond that, and then the anesthesiologist got beyond that. You know what I mean? Because they it's no longer one bill. You get them from like three or four different sources now.
Well, it depends on the hospital. Some it's one bill, right. Some's not.
Right. So but I mean, it was a variety of bills, and I remember thinking like, holy cow, if you don't have insurance, you're just, you know, you're just screwed. I don't even know what other word.
Well, I mean, I was fortunately or unfortunately, Nance, when I had a heart rhythm problem a long time ago, 20 some years, and then they've got this surgery, they call it an ablation. Anyway, I wanted to get the whole mess, but it took like forever to do. So I was in the lab at Northwestern for 9 hours. Right, this we're talking. God, it had to be 21 years ago, and
right, that came out in the late '90s.
Yeah,
I think.
And it was great because before that, I mean, you basically took these drugs which were horrible and so forth. But it worked. I mean, what the hell? I'm here and fine. But I'm in there for like 9 hours, and the bill at the time, this is a long time ago, was 120. G or something, and the net the insurance paid was, who the hell knows, 70, 60, 50, somewhere in there. So I get the bill and I'm looking at it, but the weird part of it, Nance, is you were awake. They gave you like a little dumbed down thing, but you were awake the whole time. So you could kind of tell what was going on and who was there. So me, with my, you know, ridiculous cost accounting background, I sit there and go, okay, let's say it was a team of like two guys that ran it, two or three were coming in and out. So let's say these guys make, you know, $1 million a year, which I know they don't. All right, so what is it? A million divided by 200 is $50,000 a day, right? No, not
okay.
It's $5,000 a day.
Okay.
So I go, okay, let's pay the whole day for those guys just for me. Well, that's 15. And so then we got two or three tech people. Let's say we're going to give them the whole week's pay. We'll give them another grand or 1,500. Now we're up to 20. Then there were a few other guys doing God knows what. Let's say another $5,000 for them for just though that day. Up to 25. And if the room costs God knows what, I'm 9 hours in there, let's give it $2,000 an hour. Well, now we're up to 18. So what are we up to? We're up to 40. Where the hell are you getting the 120? I mean, what are we talking about? We're not even. What's the overhead rate? 300% on top of everybody who's in there, and the machines and the rent and everything. I mean, where are we getting these numbers? Right. I mean, yours. It took the guy. So say the surgeon, the charge of him was $12,000 extra. I bet he did at least two that day of some kind of surgeries. No way in hell that guy's making $25,000 a day, Nance. No fucking way.
No. I don't think he is either. I think it goes to the overhead for wherever he works, and then they, you know, they split it down from there.
But you wonder, what is the overhead, Ray? I mean, Katie, you know, Katie.
Yes, Katie. Yes, yeah, I know Katie.
She was on Senate though, when she at Vanderbilt or Minnesota or someplace. So the overhead rate they do for research is what, 300%? Did she say 250? For God's sake, who the hell are they paying?
That, you know what? It's hard. I know it's hard to believe. I'm sure that a lot of that money, we just don't understand all the expenses with it, but I do understand that if you don't have insurance, there's going to be huge problems.
Well, that's good. But I mean, when I used to spec out a rail car contract, which in my younger days, but I don't think I could do that anymore, Nance. I'd be pretty slow. I'd need you and I to help me out. Those days, I was pretty quick at it. If you had a manufacturing facility, and for every direct hour, say you're paying somebody $20 an hour, you had an overhead rate. And your overhead rate, if it was 1.5 times that, which meant the building, the people, the machines, you name it, if your overhead rate was more than 150 or 170, you weren't competitive. How the hell can these hospitals be 300?
I mean, I don't think anybody even questions it anymore, do you?
Well, I do. Because guess what? We can't afford it, right? Duh.
Well, it's like you're saying, either, you know, half the aisle says, okay, well, we don't really know these people. It's nothing personal, but you know what? You go ahead and die. And then the other half is saying, we're going to take care of you, but we don't have the money. And nobody can come up with a solution. There's the problem right there.
But isn't that really the problem in a nutshell?
Yes, that is really where the problem boils down to. That's why I was surprised to hear you say with John that, you know, it looked like it was over. And I'm like, well, how did they do that? They were so far apart.
I'll use the term kick down the road.
Well, they're kicking the can.
Yeah. I mean, there's been no solution here of any sense. I mean, it's not like there's going to be a... And the other part is we have, in the last 2 or 3 years, we've had 4 years maybe, we've had 2 tremendous bills that went through that are a flat-out lie. The Trump's tax thing, that it's going to be accretive, is not accretive. And we have the infrastructure program from Biden saying that if we do this, the efficiencies are going to be up so much we're actually going to get our money back. They're not getting their money back. So we have 2 bills out there that are costing us an arm and a leg. When I say costing us, we're not getting as much revenue as we should. We're paying out more than we should. And guess what? Every time you get one of these, the fact is the debt is running up faster than it's supposed to. And every time you get to a debt ceiling thing, somebody's going to squawk and say, we shouldn't be here yet, but we are. And people want another slice at the apple. And everybody looks back and says, hey, you voted for this stuff. What are you surprised? Well, they're surprised because the number's creeping faster than it's supposed to, right, Nance?
I'm just so surprised. I thought they would settle this. And look at all the people that suffered for what?
Well, I mean, it came down to when you couldn't get in your private jet and called Trump on Saturday and called the head of the Schumer on Saturday, all of a sudden it's getting solved.
Was that what you really think happened?
They were going to shut down 12 airports so you couldn't get in with private jets. I'm kind of making a joke out of this, but when it starts to hit, who knows who it got to that made the call, right?
Wow.
I don't think those guys cared too much about the guy not getting his SNAP payment, but now if he couldn't land his private jet, that's a problem. I know a guy in Florida I graduated with. He either has a private jet or shares one. And he's irate that when Trump comes down there, the airport's closed or something. He can't land his private jet. He's got to go to Lauderdale or someplace. So you never know how this stuff works. Nathan, you and I don't have those problems, you know?
I don't know. It's so sad, isn't it? It's very sad.
But I don't see how we're... Do you see anywhere in the election cycle where this is all going to get fixed?
No, I do not. I do not. That's why when we talk even about mortgage rates or any of that, this has to get fixed before people are going to trust anything anymore. I think the people that are on the Trump side of the aisle are happy to see people, they feel that people, half the aisle is getting a free ride. And if you see the devastation that really happens to the people, it's hurting. You're like,
Well, you know, it is. It's always been
on the other side of the aisle. They're blaming the Democratic side is blaming the Trump side, and what they're saying isn't totally true either.
No,
each side has an element of truth in it, but not to the, and the news media I think is the worst of all.
Well, that's the part. I mean, they don't even really have to lie. They'll Did you just as this has nothing to do with anything except for what we the way we spend our lives. You're a Bear fan.
Yes.
And Nance is you're I'll say she's every woman. She helps people out, she works hard, nice lady, nice to be around, pretty darn bright, or we wouldn't have her on the show. What do you make of this of the Bear thing this week? With the for those that don't know, the Bears have this rookie wide receiver, Adunze, which is Roma is his first name, right? Roma Adunze.
Yes.
And the kid's pretty good. All of a sudden last week, he doesn't get any passes, even though the Bears won, and everybody's happy, and he's happy. Well, I think he's happy. And all of a sudden his dad, instead of being out having a few beers with people like most people do, saying stuff that probably you don't want to be staying in all the public, the guy sends out a text to God knows who, saying if they're not going to throw the ball to my kid, they should just trade him or something along these stupid lines. Now, I'm sure the guy's probably a decent guy. Now, why he had to text this out instead of just say it to the guy drinking next to him, I have no idea. So all of a sudden, it's a week-long story, Nance. The Bears had to respond to it. The coaches had to respond to it. The kid had to respond to it. Why does anybody have to do anything on this? How many hours did it take, and how many words in the media had to do with this guy saying something dumb like, well, if you're not going to throw to my kid, why don't you trade him? I mean, can you imagine the amount of news that stuff took and what a big story it was all week?
No,
what are we doing?
I can't. Because this is what I'm saying. I mean, like, it's a perfect example of what you're saying because it doesn't hurt. It's not political. You don't have to take a stance. But somebody says something out of anger or emotion on a specific day that really doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's one emotional response to something for one person, and we make it into a news story for an entire week, and that's what hurts. And that's why I'm saying I think the news media is a big portion of the problem that we do have. Because it just gets so out of control. It gets so sensationalized when it should be just, okay, so the guy said something. Okay, big deal.
Yeah, it's like...
It's one person's opinion. Can we move on?
Well, it's like being in a Tripoli tap or in a Boston game, and the guys are the most outspoken people in the world, these Boston fans, if you've never... Talk about obnoxious, but... They'll be yelling behind you. Some guy will let a goal in. This guy's the worst bleeping goalie in the world. We should like get rid of him like right now. All of a sudden, he makes two good saves, and they love him again. So what if you put the first tweet out? what difference is it? It's some guy at a bar yelling. That's what he's supposed to do. Yell at a bar. That's why you have bars, right? Anyway.
I know what you're. I understand what you're saying. It's very sad. I mean, I went to an event Friday night. Okay. And it was about, it was late night catechism class.
Oh, God.
Okay, so they went over what we learned in grade school. And if
was there alcohol served?
Yes, and if you're Catholic and you go to an all-Catholic school, grade school, you can really relate to what is being said, okay? And there was a table of men next to me, no offense intended, and the woman was performing, and they sat and talked and laughed and heckled so loud you couldn't hear a thing. The woman, not a thing.
So they had the social grace of a wildebeest.
Well, they just acted like frat boys. I mean, or kindergartners, whichever one you want to prefer. But so after finally, about
now if the lady doing the speaking would have had a ruler, that wouldn't have happened.
Well, I was thinking the same thing. She's got to call them up to the front like we used to get it. But the problem was she did not have a microphone.
Oh.
So about three-quarters of the way through, maybe about 80% of the way through, they finally got her microphone, and then you could hear. But when I turned around and looked at the guys, I thought, you know what? You paid to be here.
Now, if she was one of the old type ones, we had one and she could nail you right on the head with an eraser from the front. Never missed.
He moved around the room anyway, so yeah. She didn't have a microphone. But the thing of it was, you paid to be here, okay? You could be in the next room at the bar, right? Because there was a bar entertainment going on in the front part of the place. There was no reason to do that because I don't think... I had people at my table laughing, and I turned to my left, and the four women on the other side of me said, "Can you hear what they're saying?" I said, "No, I can't. I'm sorry." And I said, "I haven't been able to hear the entire night." And I said, "But these..."
That's okay now. I mean, acting like a knucklehead is okay now for some reason. Anyway, Nance, when the snow melts, am I going to see you? I haven't seen you in a while. You should have been with us on Saturday night. We got the whole tour of all the equipment they used for catering 250 people at the Ashford House. It was really neat. Are you with us? Somehow we lost Nance. Anyway, SP Futures up 65. Nance Futures up 384. Matt, nice job, and thanks for making it in on this horrible day.
No problem.
Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.